The reign of Philip II of Macedonia. The situation in 340 BCE, part 3. Well, we hadn't heard from Demosthenes, so let's go to Demosthenes. We're going to have the people now who just want to start war with Philip. Demosthenes and his allies had long called for war against Macedonia, even if no one had any real idea of how to win it, for the strategic situation was no more favorable now than it had been in 346 BCE. As long as the Theban alliance maintained secure, Philip could march his army south and invade Attica in such strength that Athens was bound to be defeated unless she acquired more than a handful of allies willing to support her at present. In contrast, Athens couldn't hurt Philip seriously. During the sieges of Perinthus and Byzantium in 340 BCE, an Athenian squadron had raided the Macedonian coast. In command was Phocion, a stern and capable general whose terse speech and integrity, both rare in Athenian public life, had won him respect at home and abroad, so that communities who refused to deal with the rather slippery Clares eagerly accepted him. Yet these attacks were never more than pinpricks, and the chief result was that Phocion was wounded in one of the forays ashore and simply returned to Athens. Athens' naval might meant little when she lacked the capacity to capture any significant stronghold, even when it was on the coast. Philip's own navy remained far too small to challenge the Athenians at sea, so it was not going to offer itself up to be smashed, and unlikely to let itself be cornered. According to a passage in a collection of stratagems compiled by a Roman general at the end of the 1st century AD, there was a chance that the Macedonian squadron would be caught soon after Philip abandoned the sieges. These ships had gone to the Black Sea, so must come through the Bosporus to escape back in the open water. But Chares, along with the ships from Rhodes and Chios, was guarding the straits, waiting for them. Philip wrote to Antipater that Thrace was in revolt and that the garrisons which he had left there had been cut off, directing Antipater to leave all other matters and follow him, making sure that the letter would be captured. He then waited. The Athenians took the bait, convinced that the message was genuine, and Philip had gone inland and withdrew all their ships, so the Macedonian squadron was able to sail through the straits unmolested. Chares had been once again tricked. The account goes on to claim that Philip had returned captured ships to Rhodes and Chios, who were allies of Byzantium and only indirectly of Athens. He also negotiated with the Byzantines, prolonging the talks by shifting his arguments over minor details. This helped lull the waiting allies so that they failed to react when he sailed through. The story is late and garbled, but if it is true, then Philip had avoided losing most, if not all, of his little navy and avoiding a fresh defeat to add to the failures at Byzantium and Perinthus. Each dented his prestige, but even collectively, they weren't enough to weaken his power seriously. If taken literally, the wording would imply that Philip was on board one of the trapped ships, which would have been different had the Athenians succeeded, for his death or capture would have thrown Macedonia into chaos. But we probably should not assume this, nor is it clear whether peace talks really did occur at this point or later. There is no record of any further hostility between Philip and Byzantium and Perinthus, while Athens's former allies in the islands also played little or no part in the years to follow. So an agreement of some kind is certainly likely. Although Philip had failed to take the two cities, Philip's 3 years of operation in Thrace had been otherwise successful, greatly expanding the territory under his control, establishing new colonies, and absorbing considerable numbers of Thracians as subjects or close allies. Macedonia was stronger and more secure as a result. Set against this, the renewal of the war with Athens was a minor concern, especially as the Athenians had few allies and no effective means of taking the war to the king. After supporting Perinthus, the Persians didn't seem to have to continue to involve themselves in the conflict, in part because the assassination of the great king and the succession of a minor prompted a period of internal weakness within Persia. Due to our sources, the war with Athens loomed large, but Philip's attitude is made clear by his actions over the winter, in the winter of 340 to 339 BCE. Ignoring Athens for the moment, he continued the task of securing his recent conquests in Thrace by attacking a new enemy the Scythians. Now, the Scythians are going to be a real problem. They're mostly cavalry. So let's look at a little bit of the Scythian background. Now, the Scythian king, Athias, had carved out a kingdom in the northeast, including Dobruja, an area of fertile land stretching towards the Danube, and including parts of modern-day Bulgaria and Romania. Philip's recent conquest meant that his own territory now lay close to the Scythian kingdom. Nomads from the steppes, the Scythians were famous as horsemen, archers, and formidable warriors. In the late 6th century BCE, some of their tribes had repulsed a major invasion by Darius the Great of Persia, drawing the attackers on and on until they were exhausted and vulnerable. More recently, Athias had carved out a kingdom overrunning the inhabitants of the area, forcing settled communities to accept his rule and minting high-quality silver coins bearing his name. By 340 BCE, he was 90, yet another of those tough old warlords who appear in these years. Although the area was wealthy, competition with Byzantium was hurting the Scythians, probably militarily and in terms of trade. So Philip's siege of that city was actually welcomed by the Scythians. At some point, Athias was at war with the king of the Histerians, presumably a group of people living near the Danube, and sent envoys to the Greek colony at Apollonia to ask them to approach their ally, Philip, on his behalf. The Scythian king requested soldiers and promised in return to adopt Philip, most likely through a marriage alliance, and bequeath his kingdom to him. The offer was accepted, the troops were dispatched, but before they arrived, the king of the Histrians died, and the threat appeared to have died with him. Athias sent the troops back to Philip, refusing to pay them, and boldly claiming that he'd never asked for aid nor made any promises. As proof of his claim, he stated that his Scythians were far better warriors than any Macedonians, so could not have been needed for help, and that his own son was his heir, and he needed no one else. The Macedonian ambassadors were sent to ask that Athias cover the cost of the pay and supplies for the soldiers sent to him, and some of the expenses of the siege of Byzantium. No money was forthcoming. The Scythian king protested poverty, for his people were rich only in their valor and hardiness rather than possessions. Philip may have already set on attacking the Scythians, hoping for a victory to help erase the disappointments of recent failures. He also needed money, wanting, as Justin wrote, to make up the expenses of one war by the profits of another. So we'll pick up with the Scythians next time. Now the sources for this, The Politics by Aristotle, The Histories by Herodotus, Histories, 12 volumes, by Diodorus Siculus, Peloponnesian War by Thucydides, and The Lives by Plutarch, Philip and Alexander, Kings and Conquerors by Goldsworthy, History of Macedonia, Volume 1 and Volume 2 by Hammond, In the Shadow of Olympus, The Emergence of Macedonia by Borgia. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.